hometown there about 5 or 6 days after the occurrence took place at the request of the North American Newspaper Alliance, for whom I do some reporting work and special representation, and also on behalf of True Magazine. It was Ken Purdy of True Magazine who, when running out of his office one day on some private business, had picked at random out of a mass of clippings that used to come to his desk every day a perfectly ridiculous statement that a 12-foot green monster with red glowing eyes had been seen on a mountaintop at Fatwood in, I think it's Jackson County, isn't it? West Virginia. I didn't know I was going to be asked to tell you about this tonight, so if my names are wrong, forgive me. And he gave this report, Ken Purdy, to John D. Barry of True Magazine, who was their aviation editor and was interested in flying saucers and such, and said, get a hold of Art and Sanderson and let him get down there and see what this is all about. Ken Purdy had an absolute genius for picking a news story. So I was rung up and asked to get down. So my assistant, Eddie Schoenberger, and I, we jumped in an old taxi cab out of the town, and we took off. And they say that on the way down, we went through the worst rainstorm that I have witnessed anywhere in the world, and I've lived in Assam, and I've lived in right on Cape of Winter in West Africa, which are the 2 points of highest rainfall in the world. But I have never seen rain like we had on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Well, we rolled into that was the next morning in the mountains. It is north of Charleston, West Virginia. Well, make a long story short, this is what we found out during our investigation. There were 14 all told. Number of young people, kids, and up to the age of 14, playing football on a small field in the bottom of a little valley in the village of Flatwood. The village of Flatwood is at one end of this little valley, ringed around by mountains, as you down there will probably know better than I do, or our other listeners up here. Through this valley runs a road, a blacktop road, going from north to south, also a railway line, a railway track. And at the opposite end of this little valley to the village is a small railroad station. And there is a dirt road that crosses the rail track leading off the blacktop just by that rail station, then curves up round the back of one of these mountains and sort of peters out at a field. And up that road, it's stuck on the side of this hill, I would say the very stony hill, are a number of dwellings. Up on the top of the back of the mountain, there are 4 or 5 rather larger houses. One of those houses is occupied by a family by the name of May. The lady, Mrs. May, if I remember right, is principally concerned in this affair. These kids were playing just before sundown, down on this field at the bottom of the village. And one of the kids looked up, and one of the little ones, I differentiate between kids and young people. Say kids for 5, 6, 7 year olds and young people above that, you see. Well, one of the kids looked up and he said, in so many words, what on earth is that? And they all looked around, and round the edge of the hill, behind the village, the north of the village, but lower than the peak of that hill, or the one opposite it, came a pear-shaped, glowing red object, which was pulsing from cherry red to bright orange, according to all the witnesses. It was traveling blunt end first. It traveled quite slowly across the valley over their heads and just managed to top the mountain on the other side, or the hill on the other side of the valley, which is that hill behind which there are these dwellings of which I spoke a moment ago. Well, the kids all said, as I said, gee, what was that? And one of the elder boys, whose name was Nunn, a very, very intelligent boy, of 14 years old, had remembered that at school they had been asked if they saw a meteor or anything like that, and saw anything fall from the sky, that the geological survey would be interested in getting the remains of it, or anything that was found on the ground. And he said, come on, that may be a bolide or something, and something looks as if it's landed behind that hill, because I must point out, yes, I'm sorry, that the kids all state categorically that this object, this large glowing object, which appeared to be about the size of a house, seemed to pause when it topped the hill, and then to sink, instead of going on down in the sort of trajectory, it stopped and sank slowly down behind the hill, and they could see this light pulsing behind the crest of the hill. And Nunn said, the 14-year-old said, come on, let's run up there. Something may have landed, and we need to be able to get something for the geological survey, which I think is pretty quite intelligent. So the kids ran up the blacktop, taking a few minutes, turned left on the dirt road, crossed the railway track, went up round behind the hill, and as they ran between the houses, several of the people come out on the verandas, and they said, what's going on?
And one of the younger kids said, a flying saucer has landed. Picking up, I mean, one of the little ones, you see. Mrs. May and a young man aged 18, who had just joined the National Guard, I think, or the services or something, was visiting with her. A lot of people came out, and they grabbed a big flashlight, because it was just getting dark, and they saw this huge thing lying in the field, about 2 fields away, up by the crest. So they all gathered together. There were, in the end, I'm sorry, I was wrong in saying there were 14 kids playing. The total party in the end was 14. So there must have been, there was May, Mrs. May and the young man, and then there were 11 kids, and then there was a little one, a little five-year-old, also named Nun, if I remember right, who was one of the houses, and he tagged along behind. And to me, he is one of the most important witnesses in the whole case, because it is extraordinary honesty. When he asked him certain things, he said, but mister, I couldn't see, I'm too low down. There was grass in between me. I mean, these kids were the most straightforward, honest witnesses I've ever known. They all started out, and they ran up the ridge where there's a path.
Hey, didn't the little boy have his dog with him?
Well, a dog, a collie dog, belonging to another house, not Mrs. May, nor the 18-year-old, but there was a collie-like dog that was there. Yes, thank you, John, for reminding me of that. It's a very important thing in the case. It started off with them. Well, they came to a gate which was chained, and they unchained it, but being good country folks, when they went through the gate, they rechained the gate, so no one
had. And that fence?
That gate was, a 5-bar, but it was up almost on my neck, and I'm exactly 6 foot tall. It was a high gate. But this gate is important. It is a high gate, and they rechained it, and they went on up this path. By this time, it was very nearly dark, and they turned the flash on. The dogs by this time had run ahead. Now, what they saw up there, they were within, within paces of this thing. And I think enormous fortitude was shown by those people walking up to a completely unknown object, which they pointed out to me a house, an outhouse, sort of a little barn. And I said, how big was it? And they said, about that size. We measured that little two-story barn, but it's more than 22 foot high. They said this thing had landed with the nose, the blunt end, down. So it formed not exactly a pear, but it was more like eight space, so standing up in the field, it's new enough. And they walked up to within certainly 50 paces of it, according to their description. At which time it was standing upright and making no noise, but was pulsing with very bright light from cherry red to very pale orange. I'll jump ahead of my story for a minute and say it wasn't until way at the end when we had questioned all these people, at least all the kids, together in various combinations of 2, 3, 4, and 5, and singly, and then mixed them up again, and for 3 days we went on, and they never deviated from their stories one single iota. And if you can tell me that a bunch of 12 kids can get together and make up a lie and stick to it for 10 days under the most grueling circumstances, because there were professional reporters there,
you interrogate them individually,
in combinations of different 2s and 3s and 4s and all together, and over 3 days, and there was never any evidence. And we had it taped and we had it written down. There was never a mistake. Some added a few touches which were not exaggerations. Some of them became a little doubtful as to whether it was just, as they said, the first one or the second, but they never deviated in their overall story, and I think that's very, very a powerful factor in evaluating the whole thing. And it wasn't until right at the end that one of the younger kids, I don't know which one now, I said, well, we went to try to be burned through this thing. He said, but since it wasn't hot, we'd naturally, everybody supposed that because of this tremendous light, that the thing was hot and was pulsing. Oh, no, no, no. He said, it's like a neon sign. He said, it's not hot. It wasn't hot. And they had kept on saying it was black. And I said, well, this is pulsing cherry red to orange. How do you say it's black? And I said, well, it's obviously a black object, which is giving out its light. All right. Well, they go along, they lit the flash. The dog had run ahead. And all around this object, there was a thick mist, looked like a brown mist, a patch of it, lying on the side of a hill. Now, you do get these patches of mist at sundown, sometimes a little coal up on a hill. And they had assumed that it was that. But the dog ran into this mist, going barking at this object, according to their story. He immediately set up a howl and took off back to the speed of the light down to the village and was subsequently found having vomited all over a veranda and subsequently died. Now, in other words, it was a gas. They said there was a ghastly smell, and this is what was in the report, a ghastly smell of hot, molten metal. and they caught the smell, although only one of them bent down and got his head in the gas. And that was
the one of the youngsters?
No, the 18-year-old.
The 18-year-old there.
I happened to get ahead of my story, and this is what happened. They had this Mr. Splash. They were looking at the object, and then suddenly one of the kids behind said, "Look, up in the tree." Now, there was one oak tree growing isolated right on the top of the ridge, and there's a little pathway at the bottom. This oak tree was on a bank, a 3-foot bank on the left of the pathway. The big object was a little bit further down the hill to the right, you follow me. This is to the left. The first branch growing out of the oak tree, which was a pear branch, when measured from the underneath of the branch to the path on which they were standing, was 12 or 6 inches about. Now, this kid pointed out to this branch, and underneath the branch, apparently suspended in the air, was a creature or a thing or an object about the size of a very heavy set man, but obviously contained in some kind of suit, or what looked from their drawings, their composite drawing, they all did sketches, and we put a composite of it, would look exactly like one of the most modern naval diving suits, which is solid. The person is inside, it has a pair of artificial arms in front that you can crank. The head goes into a headpiece which has a glass plate in the front. Put it on glass plate, and it's got lights in it so that you can see in the dark. And the whole thing is suspended in water, mostly by gas tanks, so that there's no great weight on the wire. So the wire that lets it down is nothing much more than an anchor, and has the telephone cable and so on going up. It seemed for all the world like that in the drawing. And at first they thought it was a 12-foot giant thing standing there, because the bottom half of it, if it had any, was locked behind a lot of little tall grass and the briars.
And the mist, too, covered it.
No, the mist was down to the right by the big object.
Down to the right.
It was perfectly clear up to the left on this little bank. And first the bank, and then all this vegetation, this herbage growing on it, and this thing was sticking out of the top of the herbage, but underneath the first limb of the tree. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
They thought it was a coon at first, because they saw that they saw the two eyes. They described them as being pale blue, a tail close together, and like very dim flashlight beams. Coming out of the plate glass window on the front of the head of this whatever it was, they were fixed beams, but the thing was turning slowly around, waving from left to right and right to left, as if it was searching the horizon with these beams. I may interject here that that particular point is the highest in the whole area, and standing where that object was, you can see 14 light beacons scattered over the mountains, away over West Virginia and down into Virginia and right back up the other side. In other words, if somebody suggested that this thing was looking for its colleague or was looking to find out where it was. But apparently when the flashlight came on, the object tilted over so that these two little beams came down and concentrated on them, and then immediately began to silently drift through the air, sort of in a half circle, towards them and around to the left to go down from its left, to go down towards the big pulsing object, the red thing that was lying in the field. So scared were they when this tremendous thing came towards them, which was of a sort of aluminum gray color, but affecting the color of the bushes and such, which gave the idea of greenness, because one of these little man, green men, always left the newspaper edition. They were so scared, a guy dropped the flash, and he bent over to pick it up, and in doing so, he got his head into this ground mist. Jump ahead again, he became so violently ill as a result, they called a doctor half an hour later down to the house, and who didn't use a stomach pump, but everything short of it, and also seemed to have had an extraordinary psychological effect on him, because he was a fine, upstanding young man. But he absolutely and positively refused, even the next day, to go back up that hill. It seemed, and he was in a frightful state that night. The doctor was really worried about him. He was completely knocked out, however. But of course, they all took off. And I don't blame them when this thing started to sail through the air towards them. I got this from the littlest one of all. I think his name was Johnny Nunn. I was asking him at various points, well, what happened when you came to the gate? And, no, not that kind of gate at all. It was a 5-barred gate, and there was some space between it. The parts of wood was certainly not more than a 12 inches.
12 inches.
Mm-hmm. I said, well, what happened when you came to the gate? And he said, well, I don't know, don't rightly know, mister. He said, I didn't try the gate. He said, I went under the hedge because I'm small, but he said, I know that Mrs. May took it in one. She went through those doors. And he said, some of them, I think, went through the gate, mister. Most of them couldn't tell at that point what they had done, but anyhow, they cleared the gate in one.